Hello, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Anna Maria Hemingway. Anna Maria has a background in studying the near-death phenomenon, near-death experience, is currently a PhD candidate, and has written a groundbreaking book called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. Major influences in her work have been Drs. Moody, Ring, Sabom, Kubler-Ross, and the work of C.J. Jung. So let's welcome Anna Maria to the show now and find out more about her research. Hi, Anna Maria. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm still enjoying reading your wonderful book, and it's really quite something. What got you started with researching the near-death experience?
Well, the near-death experience itself, I guess I got interested in when I was doing a course in conscious dying, and near-death experience actually came up in that, so that got me started.
Uh-huh.
And then I actually met some people who had had a near-death experience and found their stories really fascinating, so I started to collect them, and that was the beginning of that section of the book.
Okay. You know, I was surprised to find that you interviewed Larry Hagman, who's famous for his role on Dallas. How did you stumble across Larry? He's a fascinating guy.
Well, he happens to live in the same town as I do,
Oh. Which
is one reason. And also, he happened to be doing a book signing for a book that he had written a while ago, and he was sort of interested in the project. While speaking to him, and so was happy to donate his story.
Wonderful. It's an interesting story, too. All of the stories in them are interesting. Why do you think that research into consciousness is beginning to take off today?
Well, I think, you know, around the area that I'm working in, which is to do with death and dying,
We've been
in that phase where death is almost seen as the ultimate failure rather than, you know, part of the natural cycle of life.
Right.
And this attitude has really left people, you know, with nowhere to go when they're faced with either their own mortality or, you know, having to go through someone close to them in the dying process.
Yeah.
And I just kind of think that perhaps we've got to a stage where, you know, this isn't working for people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're becoming more interested in sort of like looking at this whole area and what a possible continuum of consciousness might look like.
Mm-hmm.
So the NDE obviously provides a sort of roadmap for people that are interested in hearing these stories because, you know, there are so many things attached to an NDE besides the fact that they have this out-of-body experience that changes their lives so dramatically. And I think this is the message that they bring back. And they tend to bring back a whole new set of values and belief system,
mm-hmm.
which helps us perhaps, you know, rethink our own.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What are some of the common threads that run between people's experiences crossing over? What are some of the things that they describe and that you would say are consistent with one another?
Well, they all describe the feeling of actually leaving the physical body. You know, some people describe seeing their inert body on the operating table or at the scene of a car crash. So they definitely seem to leave that body and set off on this journey that takes them often through a dark tunnel or a void to begin with. And sometimes they're greeted by deceased relatives or friends. That's not always the case, but certainly they come into contact with this incredible light that seems to suffuse them. This idea of a higher power, you know, however people might describe that, God in his many guises, or however the individual sees that.
Mm.
And they often have a life review,
which
is a very interesting, you know, thing to imagine, to actually see your whole life spread out before you and see how your life has actually affected other people. And so these things seem to be commonplace amongst, you know, all people that experience an NDE to varying degrees. But for me, I think the most important thing is, you know, what happens when they return to their physical bodies.
Mm. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, a lot of these people, you know, are reluctant to return. They're told they must do and they have a mission to accomplish. But, you know, some people describe that being more painful than the actual physical injuries or illness that they may be dealing with. But once they have settled back into their body, certainly all the people that I have met and talked to and stories that I collected, you know, they certainly seem to find a new meaning to life. Change of jobs, change of outlook, change of the way they actually connect to the natural world seems to be a very, you know, big one.
From the people that I've talked to on the show, it seems that there's really a transformation that occurs when they come back, and that some of them come back with special gifts, psychic abilities, even the ability to heal or read people.
Yes, I was going to add that, actually. That probably, you know, it's almost like this heroic hero's journey. They actually leave, and when they return, they're often enhanced with these new abilities and use them often in service as well.
Yeah, it is kind of like a hero's journey. It seems like every near-death experience I've read about talks about, you know, not wanting to come back, like you just said, and that they realize that there was something positive that they could do for other people that were still here, and that maybe they hadn't completed or finished something that was really a benefit to humanity. So it really is kind of a sacrifice of self, in a sense, isn't it? It's a kind of a service to others to come back and assist here?
Yes, I think so. And, you know, that certainly could be a reason why this is happening so much now, why we're hearing about it so much more now, because these people return, as you say, transformed, with certainly usually a mission of their own to accomplish. And in the world that we're living in now, they're reuniting us with perhaps a different set of values. And I sort of like to think of the near-death experience almost as though the person has sort of shed a skin, you know, like a snake or something. And that skin was that sort of like, you know, very ego-based, perhaps materially driven idea of how to live life that we all, and certainly in the Western world, seem to suffer from in one way or another. And they're perhaps aligned with, you know, something higher or something more purposeful than that.
Yeah. It's easy to see how we've become titillated by, you know, things that are materialistic, and it seems that society, at least here in America, has become so shallow that it's almost painful to look at the media or the television. I mean, I can't even watch television anymore. It's so contrary to peace of mind, and it's all about selling things. You know, there's no spirit in it. A lot of people believe that there's a shift in consciousness, and it has something to do with the Mayan 2012 prophecies. Are you familiar with those, or do you feel that there's anything going on today that is different?
Well, what I feel that is different is that what I tried to allude to in my book is this fact that, you know, being in denial about this whole area of death is almost sort of cutting us off at the knees, you know, so we are entrenched very much in this day-to-day world that we live in because we think that's it. And I think there seems to be a shift now in people wanting to, you know, find the meaning, find a deeper meaning. You know, Larry Hagman's story that I have in the book is a very good example of this, because to the outer world he would have seem to have achieved everything that a person could want, fame, wealth, you know, all those things that are so important. But Larry was still searching for something else. He had this inner quest to, you know, find a deeper meaning to life, and through his NDE-like experiences, he did come out of that transformed himself. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know whether people know it or not, but he does spend a lot of his time now working for charitable causes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had a shift in life, and he came back with this very central idea that, you know, most NDE survivors do, which is they've lost that fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some of them are actually sort of looking forward to the idea. But that doesn't mean that they're not wanting to live life. I mean, life is to be lived, and I think that's another central message that they bring back with them, is that life is to be lived, but perhaps in a more purposeful way.
Mm-hmm. With a fresh set of eyes and maybe from a different perspective.
Yes.
You know, like you said, we've tried the materialistic part, and it can only take you so far. So people who arrive at the top, you know, as the Peggy Lee song says, is that all there is? You know, you get to the top of the heap, and then what? You know, is that all there is? And so I think we're kind of reaching a point where we've done this for decades, and it's time for us to look a little closer, maybe go within and see what's there, you know, and turn around from looking outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. What is the difference that you found between a near-death experience, which is called NDE, and an OBE, which is an out-of-body experience?
Well, I think that what I actually think is, after having, you know, researched a lot of different stories in this book, is that in a sense we're talking about the same thing, whether we're talking about, as I do in the book, an after-death communication, being with somebody that's dying, a near-death experience, psychic phenomena. We're actually talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about that place where we transcend everyday consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and we actually lift the veil and link in to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, these are all the sort of same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually getting that opportunity to expand our own consciousness in some way. So I think that's a very interesting thing. And I think the other thing is that, of course, you know, for example, the near-death experience or out-of-body experiences or deathbed visions, which I write about too, are not new phenomena. I mean, they've been going on and recorded for centuries,
mm-hmm.
you know. Plato told a near-death experience as the final ending to the Republic, for example. Jesus was said to have come to Mary hours before her death to tell her that he would be returning to accompany her on her transition. Sacred texts like the Egyptian Book of the Dead or the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, they're all telling us the same thing. It's just that our connection to all of that, you know, has become so dampened down, if you like, that we think it's extraordinary when somebody relates something like this to us, but in fact, you know, near-death experiences at this very moment are probably happening somewhere over the world, and the same with all this other phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's really funny about what you're saying, too, is that so many people are afraid to talk about their experiences because they're concerned about other people thinking they're crazy. But the more that you look into all of these different aspects of living and dying, it just seems that there's a consistent message there that these are very real events, and that the more we talk about them and share them, the more we learn about them. One of the things I'm curious about is if we do have an afterlife, then it figures that we have a before life. Is this something that you found in your work?
Well, I've written texts before all the stories. I've divided my stories into three sections. The first deals with NDEs. The second, you know, the effect that death can have on a person in a transformational way. And the third section is after-death communication, and I've tried to sort of encompass everything into that section that we tend to term to be paranormal. And this is actually, you know, this is part of this whole arena. In the book, I actually mention that, you know, Dr. Ian Stevenson, you know, wrote a book of reincarnations, you know, people remembering past lives. And he took a veteran reporter with him who was, you know, very skeptical.
Mm.
But he said himself at the end, you know, that these stories were so convincing that there had to be something to it. So, you know, again, lots of people go off and they do these past life therapies, and they come out with something that seems to be, to them, to have sense and meaning. You know, that when they do have these past lives come up, they recognize them in some way.
Mm.
So, obviously, we can't say whether any of these things actually occur or don't, for sure. But again, I think that you know, the power of story and people's accounts all seem to be very connected in some way. And certainly, again, you know, this is all sort of part of this same exploration of there being something more. And I think that, you know, writing the book was really to do with that, that death for most people is a taboo subject. We don't want to talk about it. We want to get it over with as quickly as possible. If it occurs in our life, then, you know, we don't know how to deal with it, and it's very painful. And certainly it is very painful because we lose often someone that, you know, we care a lot about. But like with everything else, there's something else going on, and this denial often stops us from actually being perhaps curious and looking at all of these things that can take place, like deathbed vision, after-death communication, NDEs, because they all seem to be pointing to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't open ourselves up to, you know, embracing that idea or perhaps just researching it for ourselves, then we're sort of, you know, very shut down.
Absolutely. You know, it just occurred to me that a lot of people, I think, are afraid of death, and it might have be connected with religions today. You know, there's so much fear about, you know, sin and judgment and so on and so forth, about a vengeful and wrathful God that you know, seems to be unanimously pounded from the pulpits across the globe. A lot of people are probably afraid that what they've done is bad and that they're going to be punished. But in reading about near-death experiences, everybody that comes back says there's absolutely no judgment whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is one of the things that takes place during the NDE. And it's interesting to go back to a lot of these religious texts and old philosophies to see that although we tend to have that idea, the central message in most religions, as far as I've investigated, seem again to hint at, you know, a sacred truth that is embedded in this religious conviction. And I think that perhaps, you know, it's those central core themes that we need to pay attention to. You know, man, the human being, tends to take everything and interpret it the way we want to see it. So, you know, we have these sort of central core beliefs, and then people all split up and, well, we are thinking about it like that. No, it means this. No, it means that. You know, so we have one group of people with a God that supposedly looks at people and deals with things in one way, and then something else, you know, in a different way. And so it seems that the these core themes are very much subject to human interpretation.
Yes, that's a very good point. Yeah, very good point. And we seem to be wearing colored glasses of our own preference. You mentioned in your book that the word compassion is Sanskrit, meaning the ability to form an unconditional relationship with oneself. Would you go into that a little bit more? I thought that was a really interesting thing to introduce.
Well, I think this unconditional relationship is sort of, first of all, certainly reflected during the near-death experience. These people experience unconditional love. And I think that this idea of living our lives with this kind of idea in mind is the fact that we are looking at ourselves in that same way. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the way we relate to others is the way we relate to ourselves. And, of course, we measure ourselves through the way we've been brought up, what's expected of us, what we've achieved, what we haven't achieved. But if we see ourselves as sort of beings that have everything that we actually need to survive and to just be ourselves, I think we form an unconditional relationship with ourselves. And then certainly we can try and use this way of being unconditional with ourselves with others. And, you know, like in these teachings, the idea is that, you know, one is working for the whole rather than seeing a truth of, well, I'll do this because it'll be good for me, or because I'll get something back, or because it'll help me in my promotion. It's more because there's a genuine desire to help people, or the same with love. You know, a lot of people give love, but it's conditional. They want love in return, and if they don't get it, then they'll withdraw theirs.
Right.
So everything is often, you know, has all these conditions and regulations around it. And, you know, one of the NDE survivors in the book, Reuben Beckham, you know, says, we spend all our time trying to be more and more, worrying about what we've got, what we haven't got, what we might want. And he kind of said, if we reverse our usual way of looking at things until we become less and less and less attached to these outer things and attached to outcomes, then we realize that in reality we're everything. So this is the kind of message that a lot of people bring back with them, you know, and I think it ties very much into this idea in the Indian philosophies of, you know, true compassion comes from unconditional giving, unconditional loving.
It seems that it almost takes a major event to break through our normal everyday consciousness, which is, like you say, is largely oriented towards getting things and acquiring things to get us to wake up. Have you seen that as well?
Yes, and I think, you know, that was one of the reasons why I wrote this book. I went through the dying process with my mother, and I wanted to be fully conscious with her on this journey. And I realized as I did this that, you know, it's a very hard thing to do, but it actually can open us up to really knowing what it is that matters to us in our lives. You know, that death strips away everything unimportant. It certainly shakes us out of our complacency. And it also gives us this place where we can realize what it really means to be our most authentic selves. And I think, again, that, you know, when I was saying earlier, that there's a psychic sensitivity that opens up, that feminine energy seems to come into the whole of the dying process. And, you know, although, of course, we do suffer from grief and bereavement, we are almost expanded into this other state of being, this higher consciousness, when we are sort of out of our normal place of comfort.
Out of our minds.
Yes, exactly.
So what do you think, this is kind of asking for a definition, but would you like to tackle the idea of consciousness and what it might be?
Well, of course, consciousness is very, you know, very open to interpretation. I think what I'm sort of doing is actually looking at it from a very basic point of view, that is being, you know, very fully present with what's happening at that moment is, to me, consciousness. And that means that when we let go of a lot of our way of viewing things, our consciousness expands. You know, it's almost like when the astronauts went to the moon, they looked back at the Earth. And their whole idea of consciousness changed in a second. Because when they realized that they were looking at this small globe suspended in the sky, that they described one of them as being very fragile, that you could see the blue of the oceans, the color of the Earth, and this planet just in space. Whichever one, I might have been Buzz Aldrin, I'm not quite sure, but he actually said his whole idea of consciousness just changed in a second. Because he suddenly realized that everything is interconnected, that we are in infinite space and time. Now, for us down here, I think we sort of think that we're down here and we look up. And all these planets and things are up there, but we're really down here. of course, we're not. So I think just, you know, thinking about very simple things like that, when you talk about consciousness, you suddenly start thinking about something very differently. And in that more expanded form, and this awareness of what consciousness, you know, actually means.
One of the things that it seems I've noticed about the experiences that people describe about the other side is the infinite beauty and awesome freedom. And as you mentioned, the beings of light. Why do you think that the message isn't spreading more rapidly?
Well, actually, I think that the message is expanding more rapidly in a sense, because over recent years, we've heard a lot more about the near-death experience, for example. You know, we've had Gallup polls indicating how many people have had them. We've had medical and scientific research really looking at the whole idea of the NDE and really trying to, you know, do as much research as possible to come to some kind of conclusion. And we've actually got people now in the medical and scientific community who are more open to the idea of there being a spiritual dimension to, say, the near-death experience or deathbed visions. And I think that, you know, the International Association for Near-Death Studies has also opened up a forum where people can discuss their own experiences. Like you say, a lot of people previously have been afraid of talking about them in case they're ridiculed. I mean, there may be people listening now who think, wow, something like that happened to me, but I never have told anyone. So I think we're hearing more now. And I think these people, you know, are sort of, I like to think of them as the sort of army of people who are actually in the world, you know, slowly building up some momentum and giving a different idea of viewing life. Because, of course, one of the things that, you know, is very important about this is that they are pointing to a possible continuum of consciousness. These people are not afraid of dying. They believe very strongly that they have seen what the afterlife is going to be like.
Why do you think that we, mankind, incarnates here on this planet over and over again? And do you believe in the idea of numerous incarnations? That is, you did speak about that earlier, you know, people that recount past lives. What are some of the consistent reasons why people seem to come back here?
Well, a lot of people like to think it's a learning process, you know, that we are sort of reaching a higher frequency, if you like, with each lifetime. some people think that it's because we are turned away from God, or whatever you want to call God, and that because of that, we really have to cleanse ourselves, as it were, until we are ready to reunite with that source or connection. I mean, the truth of the matter is we just don't know. Like I say, we can look up in the sky and we see billions of planets going all around, and you know, we just don't know. Yeah. I mean, all we know is our little tiny bit about Earth and who we think we are and what we think we're doing. I like the Socrates quote that says, you know, true wisdom comes to each of us when we realize how little we know about the world and ourselves and other people.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And he said that, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 years
ago. Yeah, yeah.
Things haven't changed very much.
No, no, only the window dressing, it would seem. One of the things that I find really fascinating about the near-death experience is the life review that people write and talk about. They mention that it's almost like a holographic experience, and that they get to view their whole life from their own perspective, from the perspective of every person that they've affected positively or negatively or hurt or helped, and then from a third omniscient perspective. Is that something that you have found in your research?
Yes, it is. And I think, again, it's very difficult for us to imagine, you know, what this life review would be like in so many different dimensions. But it certainly seems that they're almost like, you know, sitting in a movie theater, watching a movie of their life. And like you said before, there's no judgment issued.
Right. But there is kind of a summary emotional net profit or loss, so to speak. I used to do accounting, so I tend to look at things as like a balance sheet. And it seems that there is kind of a feeling, an emotional feeling of people who have gone through the life review, that they could have done better, or that maybe they blew it, so to speak, and that they would really like to change that, and they see where they could do better. And as you said, when they come back, they're completely changed. Their whole life, you know, is transformed. So something important is happening here.
Yes, and exactly, and I think that's the really important part to me. And we can argue till we're blue in the face about drugs, about hallucinations, about this, that, and the other, but the fact is that these people do return. They are transformed, and this transformation is permanent. You know, many of us do things. We make a New Year's resolution. We decide to change the way we eat or whatever we do, and you know, often after a few months or however long it is, we're back to our old selves.
Yeah, yeah.
And this isn't the case with these people. The changes they make are permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that seems to point to something very extraordinary happening.
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things that occurred to me about all this is that if indeed our every thought and emotion and action that we've done has to be relived in a future date, that completely alters the way that we view our lives. I mean, it's really mind-bending, because most of us live our lives as throwing bones over our shoulders, hurting other people's feelings, or manipulating, or lying, or cheating, and we act as if there are no consequences. What do you think about that?
What do I think about death?
Well, about you know, about the fact that we live as if there is no life after death.
Oh,
and there's no
yeah.
There's nothing that happens afterwards, so we can do whatever we want.
Well, I think two things here. I think, first of all, you know, if a person does live like that, and to a certain extent we all do, we could all be more mindful, more charitable, more caring, more compassionate, certainly. But for people who are really, you know, to the extreme, as you were describing, perhaps even more so. The fact is that they are not happy within themselves. I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is that we can't behave like that to other people and feel good about ourselves. Mm. And if we don't feel good about ourselves, then, you know, life is just a battle for survival.
Yes, yes.
So that's one aspect of it. And I think the second one is that the NDE survivors actually, you know, really see this in graphic detail, like a domino effect,
uh-huh.
you know, their actions, how their actions have affected other people, how other people have reacted towards them in good and negative ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the idea of their, you know, of this idea of there being some retribution, like we talk about, you know, the fires of hell or the whatever, but that maybe, you know, every one of us will face this life review in some way. And perhaps the NDE is symbolic of what does happen.
Yeah.
You know, that we may just see it from these people because they came back into their same body and, you know, were given a second chance of life, but perhaps this is what happens. Perhaps we all go to this, and perhaps we all do come back here to one of the ladies in one of my stories, Tiffany's story. You know, she said, I looked at this and I realized I needed to come back to make a better movie. You know, to have a different life.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To have more meaning so I mean, if she went back again now, her life review would obviously be very different from the one she had before. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, this may be just a glimpse of what's to come. We really don't know the answer to that, but
yeah.
we certainly get the idea that through these religious texts, you know, the NDE, in a sense, it is actually validating what that ancient message is. You know, the Day of Judgment. Well, now we perhaps have made the Day of Judgment, you know, fearsome and all sorts of things. But perhaps the core element of that was more about reviewing the life. You know, what did you do with your life?
Exactly. Just what happened.
Mm.
And to see it played back as it was, you know, without alterations and without all the interpretations and the justifications and the lies and the manipulations, to actually feel, and people who have had the NDEs feel what they've done to others. So, for instance, if somebody rapes somebody and that person goes off and does other things, they also feel the effects of what that person has done to others.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the domino effect, they have to experience everything. So you can imagine, you know, with people who are in positions of power, who are corrupt and who, you know, create a genocide intentionally, that it must be quite a if that's how it works, it seems like that would be quite a lot to have to look at, you know, that you've created. Now, some people say that the souls who do really horrific acts against humanity or against one another are removed for a while, and that they're cleansed in a cleansing shower, and some who are really bad are removed and are placed in a kind of a cocoon, or that they're allowed to heal over a long period of time. Have you heard that from anybody? Has anybody actually talked about other people who have, that they've seen on the other side?
I haven't actually heard that myself, but I certainly know that, again, we can go back to this idea that, you know, this sort of core belief system is very much, you know, say in the Catholic religion where one went to limbo, or, you know, this cleansing process. So in a sense, you know, we have all these sort of ancient sacred truths or arrows pointing certain ways. And it very much could be. I mean, the answer to, you know, a lot of these questions, we can only kind of like surmise what could happen.
Yeah.
But certainly there is this there is this idea from the NDE survivors that, you know, something very important happens in this life review. And, you know, we look back to Plato and the myth of Ur. You know, Ur was a soldier on the battlefield. He supposedly died, but he came back to life and retold this story of how he had been sent there to observe and come back. And he certainly went through this discussion of how he'd seen the souls of the just, you know, and the souls of the unjust, and that they were asked to make choices again about their future lives, and some made the same foolish choices again and would have to continue with this, mm-hmm. you know, life cycle. And of course, in Eastern philosophy, the idea of karma is very strong, that, you know, one does not escape.
Right.
That it catches you up somehow. And so, you know, I think we can only look back and glean as much information as possible, and obviously people have to make up their own minds. But certainly it looks like all of these things are really, you know, very strong pointers to how the way in which you consciously are living your life.
Absolutely. You know, it also occurs to me that, you know, not everybody can have a near-death experience. There are people who can teach how to have an out-of-body experience. But it seems almost like we're just now tipping out of some kind of dark ages where we've considered ourselves to be kind of the top of the heap, and now we're going to kind of graduating into another level that may be the first grade again of a new, of maybe high school or whatever it is, where we're learning that we're not the top of the heap, and maybe there's more to this living business than we thought. What about angels and guides? Do people talk about having angels and guides on the other side and on this side?
I think that the idea is that, you know, the people that I have interviewed and the stories in the book certainly seem to reiterate the fact that we are all interconnected. We're not alone at any time. And perhaps, again, you know, the only time that the individual this might be, you know, proved to them in some way is when they're in really dire circumstances and they cry out for help. And this help does seem to manifest, and then they actually have that sense of you know, there being this sort of like guidance from above, or where, you know, it doesn't have to be above, but certainly that we are all linked to this source. And it's like, you know, we've all played truant and gone off on our own and now being like called back.
Well, some of the Hindu teachings tell us that it's the out-breath and in-breath of God, and we've had the out-breath, and we're on the verge of, we're at that moment, you know, in time, which is approaching around 2012, I guess, when the galaxy actually shifts into another dimension. And so it's quite possible that, you know, we're headed for some remarkable experiences. You know, again, we have no way of knowing these things, but intuitively, I think we all feel that there's something going on, you know, and that this is a really important time to stop, look, and listen, and really question ourselves and ask ourselves if we're doing what we really feel we need to be doing here.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, one of the things to do with this whole area is that this idea of why are we living the way we do when we're often not happy with it?
Absolutely.
And I think that's a big part of this questioning all the time.
Yes. Well, look at the amount of things that are out there to change your relationships or to get a better job or to create abundance. And I'm sure you've seen that movie, The Secret, which is about creating abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, it's not about having more things, but in changing the way you view what you have. If you look at everything you have as being abundant now and completely enough and satisfying, then it removes the need to acquire anything more. And from that space, you can have things that the universe wants you to have.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you is, was there anything remarkable that you discovered from the people that shared their stories? What's something that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, I think all the stories are so inspirational and uplifting. It can really help open up a whole understanding of conscious living, and that does incorporate conscious dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people think, oh, a book about death, you know, that must be full of gloom and whatever, but it's not at all. I think it actually allays a lot of that kind of fear. One of the most interesting things that I found out during my research that I, you know, try and mention a lot in the book is that, you know, everybody I have met, when I ask them the question whether they're an atheist, whether they believe in NDEs, whether they don't, you know, have you ever had an experience in your life that has been so extraordinary, that has affected you in some really deep, profound manner that you can't rationally explain? And I haven't met anyone who said to me that during their life they have had nothing
That's
and,
good.
You know, my answer to that is, you know, that's what this book is about, really. It's kind of trying to make people aware that they themselves have probably already experience something that's telling them there is something else. And, you know, that if we were more open, if we embrace that part of ourselves, that perhaps all-knowing place that resides within us, our lives might be a lot happier because we're not in denial about what, you know, life is actually about. And to a certain extent, life is about the fact that, you know, death is an integral part of our lives. And this denial causes, I think, a lot of anguish and upset. But, you know, through all of these stories, we have so many different kinds of stories. You know, stories that show how clear after-death communication can be and what it's done for the person who's received it. Or we have near-death experiences or deathbed visions or, you know, philosophy from Plato or something. There's so much information out there. And I think one of the really important things is that, you know, we have the natural world all around us that constantly gives us this same message of, you know, death and resurrection. But even our, you know, our contact with the fact that we are part of the natural world. We're not, like you said before, we're not over here and everything else is just part of the natural world. And I think even just reconnected with the life, with the natural rhythms of the natural world can do a lot to help heal this huge divide.
Yeah, you're so right about being in denial about so much of this. And one thing that you mentioned, too, was that when people return, not only are they transformed, but their fear of death they're not only not afraid of death, they're looking forward to going back where they just were. You know, they're more than willing to come back and do what they, you know, agreed that they were going to come back and do, but they're really looking forward to the reality that's on the other side. That's pretty astonishing. And they, and you know, do you find too that they describe that the other side is more real or as real as this one?
Well, I think certainly from the descriptions, you know, it's very hard in a sense. All we have words to describe what these people have seen, but the colors certainly seem to be more vibrant. The light is lighter. Certainly the same thing happens in after-death communication. You know, the person is so full of energy and so sort of there. It's so different from an ordinary dream that, you know, so there is something very, I don't know how one would describe it in a sense, but it seems like it, you know, everything perhaps is just more beautiful in some way, more joyous. That's reflected in these, you know, very ecstatic descriptions that use all these words like beauty, you know, wonderful melodies and the music they hear, this love that they've never experienced before. You know, it certainly is almost above our capabilities to imagine what that would be like.
Because
we all have our own ideas about what these things actually mean. And that's why I think, you know, story has such power. Because it can help us imagine with the person that's recounting these stories of what it is they've actually witnessed. And, you know, a lot of them, when they do come back, you know, they're trying to paint what they saw or write about it. And often the thing is, it wasn't enough. I couldn't actually make it real enough, you know. I mean, one man, Andy Lakey, the angel painter who is actually featured in the book, spent 3 years trying to paint his near-death experience and just couldn't get the colors right, or they just weren't bright enough or vivid enough. So I think perhaps it's rather difficult for us to imagine, you know, this very ecstatic journey, near-death journey.
Yeah. Well, it sure seems that it would be liberating, you know, to really have a deep understanding and an intuitive knowing that we do continue after this life, and that we were here before, that we were in spirit form before we came in, and we will continue as infinite eternal beings, and that there is really something positive to look forward to, that it's not something negative. And I think we've really been brainwashed in this in our society to just shut down and be afraid of so many different things. And one thing that they seem to mention consistently is that there's just nothing but love and, like you said, beauty, unimaginable colors. And, you know, it seems like we're not creating that on this side. We're kind of headed we're headed for the brink of the chasm, it would appear, you know, with so many things going on in the world. Maybe raising awareness, as your book does, will help us to realize that we can't just throw bones over our shoulders, and that the planet Earth is alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the guests said that he was taken by he called him his angel, called Bob, his guide, and then he was taken on a, you know, outside of the Earth, and he could see the energetic forms of people, you know, and he could tell which ones were good, which ones were bad. And, you know, it wasn't a description of Christmas Eve and Santa Claus, but, I mean, he could see the energetics of, and then he was shown the energetics of the planet itself as a being of light. And, you know, those are just amazing things to share. You know, whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter. It stimulates our imagination and helps us to realize there is more out there.
Well, yes, and I think that's why this denial of death is so, you know, how can I describe it? It really stops us imagining all of this because we don't want to go to any of those places.
Yes.
But, like you say, actually trying to really explore this whole idea adds a kind of new dimension to our lives, because certainly there is a strong possibility from all the things that we've discussed that there is a continuum of consciousness in some form after physical death.
Oh, absolutely.
And isn't that a better idea to embrace, you know, and to study and look at? And I think that's why, again, these stories are really so important. I mean, some of the people in my book have described similar things. You know, they've been shown the whole cosmos. They've been shown the miracle of creation.
Yes.
seen other planets.
Yeah.
You know, seen the most incredible things.
Yeah. And to know that we are that important in the scheme of things, that our lives do have value.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just some piece of flotsam and jetsam that accidentally plopped down here. You know, we are great beings that are worthy of, you know, being shown the galaxy. You know, I find it really liberating to read these stories, and I've been enjoying your book immensely. Because they are true stories, and yet they're so much more colorful than fiction. You know, it's just fascinating. Would you tell us? We're almost at the end of the show. The hour seems to have flown by. Would you share with us where people can, you know, tell us with the name again, the name of your book and your website, and where people can find it?
Yeah, the name of the book is Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. It's published by O Books. It's available from www.o-books.com. It's available from Amazon, all the Amazon sites. You can get a copy from any good bookstore in the English-speaking world, actually. And, you know, a host of whole other web book sellers have copies, too. The website, for anybody that might want to read more about the book or see the reviews or endorsements, is www.practicingconsciousliving.com, and also details are available. There's quite a lot of information actually on the Amazon page for the book. So Amazon.com has a shortened version of the reviews, but certainly you can get more information from my website.
Well, wonderful. Well, I sure do recommend it, and I want to thank you for doing this. It's really groundbreaking work. And for being on the show tonight, and I wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You're
and,
welcome.
I've enjoyed it. It's gone by, you know, in that place of where an hour suddenly seems like 2 minutes. But thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Good night, Anna Maria, and good night to all the listeners.